Hare Krishna, this is Benadar Swami. Please excuse me for being a bit late. I did know it was daylight saving time, but when I turned my clock ahead, somehow I missed it by 10 minutes. Okay, is anybody like to say Hare Krishna so I get a sense there's someone there?
Yeah,
Hare Krishna.
Okay, great. Here are all my friends. Great. Sorry about that. Reading from the Gopher, there's also a yellow notebook upstairs where I have my notes. It's probably on my bed or something. Reading from the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Volume 1, Chapter 4, Text 57. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vichitta Divya Divyascha Kadapadhyay Svanirmatai Stutim Anyais Chakurvanam Dandavat Anatir Api. Excuse me for 1 second. Excuse me, I have a little cold here, so I'm off the chapel. He glorified the Lord with various prayers in prose and verse. Most excellent compositions of his own. He also recited prayers composed by others. And he repeatedly offered prostrate obeisances. Commentary. And you should have done it. Some of Hanuman's prayers were his own compositions, and others he borrowed from the Puranas and other scriptures. So greetings from Sayreville. I'm at the C.C. Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Mandir, the home of Gopkishore and Kishori Radha. We had a very, very nice sangha yesterday. And it was very, very encouraging to me. I came back from India, you know, and sometimes you expect to see people half dead, you know, living in the material world. When George Harrison came to Mayapur, I was there. Well, you really get people's attention when you quote George Harrison. When George Harrison was in Mayapur, it's great. I got to take breakfast with him once more one morning. And he ate so much. Tons. He loved the prasad and he stayed overnight. And when he left, and the devotee was in the car with him, told me as he left and he entered into Calcutta, he started singing Living in the Material World. So living in the material world, I expected to see people. But I was actually energized. Somehow or other, there is a kirtan revolution going on, at least here in the Northeast. There's really a kirtan revolution. And there's so much quality kirtan. And that's the Yuga Dharma. And people are just being influenced by it. Jiva Goswami says that even kirtan is better than chanting alone, because it gives special feelings of bliss. Because it's Lord Chaitanya Sankirtan, I can pick it up. He's the father of Sankirtan. His kirtan is so powerful. I upstate New York. I was just there. I went up and I have a very nice little room and kind of office now where I can do my writing. I'm very happy about it. And some of you know Mother Karini. She's also moved up there. She's very ill, but she's very happy. Sachi, Sita, and Kaylee Lita. He gave me shelter and gave her shelter. So, and Gauravani was up there. This Sachi is has a record label, and he's started something with Gauravani, Kirtan. So above me, there's a yoga studio. And so when I came, I found out that there's going to be kirtan that night. It was kind of short notice because Gauravani wasn't there on a kirtan tour, but he was there to organize this record label with Sachi. But it was amazing. You know, I walked upstairs and, you know, on either side, you know, that's called the bhajan bell. So there's kirtaniers that live all in that area. So near the Kripalu, there's one famous drummer. He does it all the kirtans. He's incredible. He can play, I don't know, he had clay pots and I don't know, all kinds of things. He was banging around with so many instruments. And then there was this person called Steve Gorn. And I've heard of him before. And Steve Gorn is Bansari. Those are wood flutes. He's incredible. Very famous. He came from Woodstock about an hour away. And then I come down here and beautiful place here, and it was pretty much packed. And I would say in one sense, we didn't really have our first string kirtan. You know, first string is like Gauravani or Ananta or Chuta, or, you know, Kinchin is coming near, you know, is becoming very good. But, you know, still, there's just so many kirtaniers. And I guess, you know, the place was kind of rocking, but I looked at the people, you know, and sometimes when you're a preacher, you kind of have to, like, pull the people up. But they were pulling me up. It was such enthusiastic kirtan. And people were into it. They were into it. The kirtan went on for at least, I think, maybe 4 hours, because we started at 2. I spoke a little bit in between, had a little book selling, but, you know, then afterwards, people are doing kirtan. Maybe look up, someone's doing kirtan, and it's good kirtan. So that was enthusiastic, and it reminded me of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's prediction, Pritivati Achiyata Nagarati Gam, that the name of Krishna will be there in every town and village. And I heard the New York Times just had an article about kirtan. Anyway, Northeast is special. It's the Bhajan belt right up there. So there's just, yeah, Prabhupada came to Tompkins Square Park, began to chant Hare Krishna. Who would have expected that kirtan would be proliferated so, and it's so universal. But when I was upstate, Gauravani, you know, he was doing some bhajans, different bhajans. He did a little Hare Krishna. And then, you know, he asked me to speak. I just told him, you know, you should do it. But I said, okay, at least one. So in between one song, he asked me to speak. And I explained, you know, I came in at 4:30 in the morning off a 14-hour flight just 2 or 3 days previously. And, you know, this is already at 9 o'clock at night. And I said, I'm jet lagged, but kirtan is such a phenomena. The rhythm, the melodies, the sangha, the association, it's such a phenomena that even someone who's jet lagged can be absorbed. Who can perform yoga when they're jet lagged? You can't even watch your favorite TV show when you're jet lagged. Jet lag, you can perform kirtan. There was also a person there too who's an incredible musician. He's a professor up there of music. Super nice guy. And he had, I forgot what you call the instrument, but it's kind of like almost like a sitar, but it's played with a violin thing. And he was really good too. So it was like, it was just wonderful. Then I came down here, wonderful. So it's kirtan. And Gaurijan's wish came true, you know. You saw how many things people get into. He said, I hope kirtan becomes a fad. And now there's a fad of kirtan, and people love it. Now let's get on to the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. What's the Brihad Bhagavatamrita about? not kirtan. Because it's the essence of the Bhagavatam. Basically, Marge Prickett's cursed to die in 7 days, and the last day his mother comes and he has to summarize what he's learned. And what is the Bhagavat, what is the Bhagavat, he learned the Bhagavatam, what is the Bhagavatam? It's a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. And what is the Sutra? Sutra is very interesting. I've been talking about this in my class on the Yoga Sutras. Sutra means what? Su means the same thing as so in English. So, because su means thread, and you sew with a thread. So it's the essence. Essence. The Bhagavatam is already, it's a commentary. It's, the Vedanta Sutra is the essence. It's the essence of the Vedas. That's the, and it's in aphorisms of codes. And generally, the sentences can't be more than 6 words. Otherwise, it's not a sutra. It's got to be compact. The Yoga Sutras are 195 verses and like 700 words. But it contains. So you need to have a commentary. Otherwise, you can't understand it. It's understood. It's packed, so condensed, that you need the key to unlock it. So the Bhagavatam is the key to unlock the Vedanta Sutra. And then Marge Prickett had to summarize it. What's the essence? The essence is kirtan. Because it's based on the question, what is the duty of a man who's about to die and what should he not do? And the answer is immediately given, Harinam Anu Kirtanam. The answer is given, it's kirtan. The peerless method of success for all. It's kirtan. You want to be fearless at the time of death. You can become fearless at the time of death because if you can become self-realized, which means to separate the soul from the body, then you're not affected by it. You don't feel it. You don't experience it because it's happening. The transformation, which normally people experience as death, is happening externally to one. It's something external. It's something outside. It's like your car gets hit. If you're detached, then you don't feel so much pain. But if you think you're the car, you got greasy hair and you're polishing that car all day long, you know, you get nice chrome fenders and whatever it is, then, you know, you feel it. But it's actually something external to you. And if you have a little knowledge, it really, you know, maybe some effect, but it's not you. You want to become fearless. The method is this kirtan, this sankirtan. And that'll also be the method of the Bhagavatam. That's the Brihat Bhagavatamrita. Ultimately, in the story of Gokumar, which recommended, is sankirtan. Sankirtan has two meanings. One meaning is when people get together. Another meaning is when the name is chanted completely. And the name chanted completely is when the name is chanted with affection or devotion. Sachinandana Swami, he wrote me recently. I sent him something. He just made a comment on something where he said, I think effective chanting is when you chant with affection. Very important to have some bandha. And that's the purpose of Shastra and deities. Purpose of Shastra and deities is to give you some bandha, give you relationship with God, so you can chant japa at the level of sankirtan. You can chant it with affection. Now, in this story that Marge Prickett tells, you know, I'm kind of getting back in the groove. In the story that he tells, he's searching for the person who has the topmost, the essence of, what do they call it? Finding the essence of the Supreme Lord's mercy. And the Lord's mercy is in the hearts of the devotee. Because that's the only thing that's really not external to you, really, is your heart. Not just material, but really within the soul, really. And that's in the heart. It's into the heart. So that's really you. You really feel it deeply. It's not just external. And that mercy is the Lord's own pleasure potency, which is nice because the pleasure potency is love or devotion. To the extent you have that in your heart is to the extent you're fortunate. There's no other really other, there's really no other criteria of fortunate and unfortunate. Of course, we're conditioned in this world to look at fortune and misfortune in terms of money and other things. Of course, that also is fortune. Because on the level of trying to attain the ultimate mercy, we have to, or it's wise to try to make one's material situation suitable so that one can be satisfied enough to pursue the higher endeavor of self-realization. But ultimate mercy is devotion. And who has the most is the most fortunate. And therefore, if you really think of it, you can think of a very, very simple person who's fortunate. I was thinking when I'm in Vrindavan and I stay at Giridhar Swami's place, there's a house servant. It's quite opulent to have a house servant. I mean, it's really something. I mean, but he's there and he's a Vaishnava and he'll do anything to me. Wash the clothes, clean the room, go get this, do anything. And really, as a servant, when I'm there, he looks at himself as an object of my desires. But I think he only makes 2,000 rupees a month. That's like 40-something dollars. That's all he makes. And every time I stay there, when I leave, I give him a nice donation. But he's so blissful. Can you be blissful in that situation? That you were, you know, making $40 a month. Of course, it's India. You're living with your parents. There's definitely no heater in your house. There's definitely no geese or hot water. He may come to the level of radio. He'll never come to the level of iPod. Can you be happy? But I looked at that guy and said, well, he's so fortunate. He's a Vaishnava. Rich from ear to ear. So we should also search for the essence of the Lord's mercy. And we shouldn't be so foolish to see it in terms of somebody's wealth, or they may be fortunate, or whatever. The real mercy is the heart that's been touched with love or devotion. And therefore, Narada is searching for that. And we see how it's manifest in different devotees. And Narada goes to Prahlad, who points to the glories of Hanuman. Because of his service, he's serving Lord Ram constantly. And he's serving him with so much devotion. So he points to Hanuman. And of course, we see in this Brihad Bhagavatamrita the core conception of spirituality. It's just like I was mentioning. Spiritual consciousness is seeing yourself as the object of God's desires. Right now, we don't see ourselves as the object. We see ourselves as the subject. And we see God's world as an object for our own desires, which frustrates us. Because when you're not the controller, you can't be the enjoyer because things don't move your way. So until you shift your consciousness and see yourself as an object of God's will and desires, it's very fearful. And that's really, and when you see that, then humility becomes natural. Because your identification is with a position which is not in the center. And you're very happy in that. It's like a relief. You've given up the struggle for existence. You've surrendered the struggle. You've given it up and you're free then. That's why we're bound, because we want to be in the center. We have to be put in illusion to satisfy that desire. So until we give up and really want to be the object of the Krishna and Krishna's representatives' desire, what is Prabhupada's glory? He was simply an object in his mind of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's desires. And when you're in that position, which is not illusion, then the yogamaya, or the internal potency, flows through you, which is imbued with the pleasure potency. Until you put yourself in the position where love can flow through your heart, you can never be satisfied. You can't be satisfied by nature, because that's what we're meant to do. And you can't be satisfied by positive experience, because that is the positive experience of pleasure, is love or devotion. So we see these devotees who have put themselves in that position. And in the Yoga Sutras, which I'm studying, one of the meditations is to actually make the object of your meditation such people who become selfless. Because it comes to you. And that's why we're reading Brihad Bhagavatamrita, because we're reading about these great souls. And now, Prahlad has pointed to Hanuman. But then Narada Muni, he really tells him, you have to go and see for yourself. Because, you know, everyone's heard the glories of Hanuman. But see for yourself. That's an experience, when you see for yourself. How many times do people say, you know, I heard about it, but when I saw it, it was so much better. Or I heard about it, but when I saw it, it was so much worse. It's so much better. You have to see it yourself. You have to see it yourself. You can only describe so much. So now we're at the point where he flies in to where Hanuman's absorbed. He's worshiping Ramachandra's feet in the form of a deity. And at that level, Ramachandra actually appears. That's our concept of the deity. The deity is a receptacle where the Lord will appear. And if there's the proper devotion, he'll be there. That's why it's not the Lord is personally appearing in anything. Of course, a great devotee, God can appear through everything. But God has appeared there because this is the method he appears. This is the authorized receptacle where God will appear if you approach it in the proper way. So with Hanuman's devotion, Rama is there, and he's worshiping. And he's in ecstasy. And while he's worshiping, he's listening to the Ramayana sung by Gandharvas and other celestial singers. So this is the class of demigods that can sing. And sometimes we see it in the world, that there may be a really great singer. Right off that, I'm thinking of Karnamrita, an incredible singer, gifted. I remember when she sung for Krishnamayi, the young lady who is dying in Vrindavan, and she comes to sing. Amazing. Forgiven. But this is still this world. The Gandharvas. Now put everybody in my, think of your favorite singer, and it shouldn't be throat. It should be someone who really has some talent. No hardcore screeching here. Some real singer. You know, wow. So beautiful. Celestial singer. And what are they singing? They're singing the Ramayana, which is described as the Sayana. The Sayana means like a medicine, a sweet-tasting medicine that rejuvenates health. So that's what Krishna Katha is. It's often described as like a medicine because it awakens the nature of the self. And our problem is our illusion. A problem is not what we lack. A problem is the illusion that we don't have it, really. It's the part of God. Everything is there. So anyway, it's just like a person sick. The potential of health is there. So this Rasayana, it brings out the potential of health is actually brought out. And it's sweet, it's nectarian, but also it's Rasayana because it's the reservoir of blissful tastes of loving relationships, which are exactly what we are lacking. We're lacking that. Prabhupada in the Nectar of Devotion mentions, where is that object of love where we can fully repose the loving propensity? The loving propensity has to be satisfied. Ultimately, it has to be satisfied in relationship to God, ultimately. Because the object of your love has to be eternal. Otherwise, there's duality in that love. And it has to be art, it has to be real, it has to be substance. Things that are temporary are not substantial. They cannot satisfy one. So this is the Shastra, this is the Bhagavatamrita, this is the Ramayana. You read about the bliss of love and it comes to your heart. It's nectar. And at the level of Hanuman, that nectar invokes super ecstatic symptoms. And here it's described, he's glorifying the Lord with various prayers, in prose and verse. He's speaking, then there's verse, poetry, and he's composed it himself. And then he recites notable prayers. You can do it yourself or notable prayers from people who have a perfect love of God, they write. Anyway, either way, it's coming from the heart, and that's where prayers are born. That's where music is born. It's coming from the pure heart. Some kind of pure emotion can manifest into something very, very beautiful. Main symptom of love is speech, either singing or talking. Right? That's why when a boy loves a girl, right, they're on the phone all the time, hours and hours and hours and hours. So until they find out the truth later on. But initially, when the love is there, they're talking and talking and talking and talking and talking and talking. And that's how they express their love. That's how they feel their love. That's how the love develops. So here's Hanuman. We see, when you have that potency in your heart of devotion, you talk and talk and talk and talk about love. You talk and talk and talk about love. Again and again about love. You talk about the person. And then there's actions in love. And for the servant, prostrate obeisances, expressing that love. So Narada is watching this, and then what happens? Chukrosha Narada moda. He cries out of joy. Because it's contained. This is what he's come to experience. And by seeing the devotee in love, he feels love. This is the system. If you focus on it, you watch a horror movie, you become scared to death. Romance, you become disturbed. You become romantic feeling. Tragedy, you can cry. You hear about bhakti or devotion, then it affects the heart of someone like Narada, and he begins to cry out in joy, Jaya Sri Raghunathana, hey! Jaya Sri Janaki Kanta, Jaya Sri Lakshmanagada, and cries out in joy. He cries out in joy. He expressed his feelings and seeing. He's so happy. He's so happy. In presence of the devotee, one should become happy. Najeshta Shramano Nama Kirtana Shruti Bhashita Uttutya Hanumandurat Kunteja Grahanardam. Delighted to hear, glorified the names of the Lord he worshipped, Hanuman jumped from where he stood and caught hold of the neck of Narada. So Hanuman's worshiping, and then he sees Narada glorifying his Lord, and he becomes very affectionate towards Narada and jumps up and grabs his neck. Standing in the sky, Narada was overjoyed. With his feet, he danced, and with his hands, he wiped away the flood of loving tears from the eyes of the Lord of the monkeys, sharing Hanuman's unique mood of loving ecstasy. Narada spoke in a loud voice. So Narada could only use his feet for dancing because Hanuman held him by the neck, because Narada's hands were busy wiping away Hanuman's tears. So enthusiasm, utsaha, utkanta, Krishna kirtana ganana. Krishna kirtana ganana paro prema mrita. What is the symptom? The first most important symptom of the sixth Goswami? Krishna kirtana. Enthusiastically glorifying God. That's the symptom. Prema mrita bhoti. In love, day and night. That's the symptom of advancement. You know people who are advanced, they chant here all day. Krishna kirtana. And that Krishna is Krishna utkant. Utkant means enthusiasm. Why? Kanta means neck and ut means to stretch. So the image of enthusiasm is a bird stretching to be fed, maybe to get a worm or to be fed by his mother. The neck stretches. The neck stretches. That's utkant. That's enthusiasm. So much you want. So much you like. So, Narada was overjoyed. And he Hanuman's hanging from his neck, but Hanuman's crying. And Narada's hands are just wiping away the tears. And then he shares the ecstasy and he speaks in a loud voice. Are there any questions? Okay. Anybody like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Nanda Dulo, Hare Go. Hare Krishna, you got to speak louder. I can't hear you.
Now, after a long time, we are hearing you from East Coast.
Right, right. And this might, yeah, that's right. Wasn't it, yeah, where did I speak? When I write this week, right?
That's the first, I think I heard from after you came.
Now to do, Lama. I'm fired up. We had a great program here yesterday.
Yeah, I had enough. I wish I could be there, you know, but I send you an email with my present address.
Okay.
I'm up in Fairfax, Virginia now.
You're in Virginia now?
Right.
Where is that?
That's close to Washington, D.C.
Okay, I'm going to Washington, D.C. Why don't you and your... Is Savitri with you?
Yes, you know. We have a small apartment, you know, two bedrooms, you know, but one is now for you.
One is for me, huh? How far from Washington, D.C.?
10 miles.
Is it near Alexandria, Arlington?
Yes. Arlington is now maybe 6-7 miles. It's actually, Maharaj, this is the suburb of Washington, D.C., they call. It's very busy in the morning and evening, but daytime is okay.
Well, anyway, because my program is 6, but I'm going to be doing programs in Washington from April 18th,
19th, 20th, 21st,
okay?
Okay, Maharaj, I send you an email about the new address and everything. Pay attention, kind of.
Maybe even I could...
Come earlier.
Well, it's already... Flights are already booked, I think.
Okay.
We'll see. Okay.
Let me know, Maharaj, if I can do any service for you in here.
Okay. Well, knowing that you're there, and knowing the nice reception I have in Washington, D.C., who knows, maybe one evening there. Let's see. I'll have to see. If I'm free one evening.
Okay.
And maybe if I'm staying with, anyway, we'll see.
Okay,
anyway, it's nice to have you there, Kasai. It's almost easier for me to visit you there than the Poconos.
That's true.
Okay?
Thank you.
Okay, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Anybody else like... Yes, who's that?
This is Gail. Have I missed my Q&A chance? Yeah.
You didn't miss your Q&A chance, Gail. Yeah, I'm always open to your very sweet and submissive questions.
Thank you, Brian. I had actually forgotten what my question was. That's why I didn't chime in earlier.
I was shocked when I said, are there any questions? And there was dead silence. I was ready to call 911 to see if Gail had a heart attack or something.
I was having a heart attack, Maharaj, because I couldn't remember my question.
Anyway, I was just ready. You asked Gopi Shoy, I was ready to call 911.
Okay, my question was, you know, when you were saying that the heart is the only part of us that's really not external, and I had a question about that because when you talk about the heart, I usually think of what we feel most deeply, you know, spontaneously.
Yeah.
I think of spontaneous desires when I think of the heart. And sometimes those spontaneous desires are not really directly for Krishna.
And so
if you could explain.
Well, I kind of was just trying to just give the example is that, if I remember what I was talking about, what I was really trying, when I was doing the heart, I don't know if I had a particular locus, you know, place. I just try to use it to the fact that, you know, I was really meant to soul, really.
Mm-hmm.
When something touches the soul, it's permanent.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to contrast that with so many other, I forgot these things, so many other things we have that are really external to the self. I was really talking about the soul. Nehabhika manasho sti, pativayo navidyate, sopam apyasya dharmasya tayatoma tobayat. You know, when you do spiritual endeavor, it's a permanent result. So that's really, in the context of my class, what I was referring to. Okay?
Yeah, and also, you say that, I know the answer to this is going to be kirtan, but I guess I just want you to confirm that.
Go ahead. Yeah.
That, you know, if you are in, you know, the position where you really cannot identify a sincere taste for pleasing Krishna in your heart. You know, you don't have any fun. You know, you may want to do it out of intelligence, but from the heart, that's not there at all, you know? And so the only way to get from here to the place where you do have even a little bit of spontaneous desire to please Krishna with anything you do, you know, to make him happy, I mean, to actually get a taste for that, the answer is kirtan, huh?
Well, Gail wants to know, I have an audience today. Gail wants to know how you can get real, legitimate, spontaneous feelings. You got to get a taste. And the first taste is an attraction for serving God in some way. Even it may not be 100% on this platform of the soul, it'll be connected to that. Some taste. Somebody just likes to humbly serve people. He serves the devotees. You know, I saw upstate, you know, Sachi Soup and Kaylee, they're really busy. She has three children. He's running a multi-million dollar business with 80, 90 employees. But, you know, they have Mother Kalini up there, and they're serving her. You know, great thing. So, they have a taste for that. They like to do it. So it doesn't really have to be a relationship with Krishna. You know, they like to do it. Somebody may like to make flower vases. It may be connected with their material nature.
Mm-hmm.
Someone may like music. You know, so that taste, and Borijan is quite a wise person. I like what he said. He said, you know, your taste for serving Krishna is like your door to the spiritual world, which is like your door to some spontaneous feeling.
Mm.
You know, so some people like, I was in Vrindavan. And in Vrindavan, I had this nice assistant named Mahari. And Mahari was a disciple of Kamal Krishnamurti. I think he just turned 50. And his wife, you know, and he liked serving the devotees, and he was cooking very nicely for me. And I had guests. It was very nice. He likes to do that. You know, so that's a taste. But when I gave him, and when I was so busy because I had this Puri Yatra, it was, you know, running this festival and doing most of the speaking and whatever. And then after that, coming back, and it was just constantly taking people out, I had him worship my deity. So that month, he worshipped my Giriraj. And I just saw he just became overwhelmed. It was just like, this is what he was looking for his whole life. Now, not everyone may feel that way. It may be, but he just, it just, you know, decorating and painting my deity and cooking for my deity, and he just was expressing to me, I've never done this before, my, you know, his whole taste for Krishna consciousness is just aroused. But then the problem, I was taking back the deity. But somehow or other, I told him to pray, and then Giriraj came in a very, very wonderful way for him that he'll never forget.
Hmm.
And a beautiful Giriraj came. And basically, it's like someone giving birth to a child, you know, the enthusiasm, you know. He's just so enthusiastic for that deity. And so, you know, now you can say now, maybe have a legitimate, I think there's some taste, you know, but it's also some propensities get mixed in too. So that's on one level. And the other level is once you get that taste and you can absorb, now we say kirtan, because somehow that seems to be a universal principle in most people that they love rhythm, they love melody. It's almost their whole being is rhythm and melody. And there are Shastric arguments that that's a fact. So, you know, somehow music just captivates people. And they can become absorbed. And when you become absorbed in Krishna and Krishna's name, and you become absorbed in Krishna's name, then you really do get a taste. So kirtan is very, very powerful. By the way, Gail, I was watching you in the kirtans yesterday in the front there. You seem to have become a little bit absorbed.
No, the last bhajan, whatever. Only that one.
Okay, well, something was there, Gail.
Not very much.
Something was there, but anyway. I think you're just like Hanuman and Prahlad. Even though you're glorified, you just say, "I'm not a devotee." Okay, Gail. Let me end on that. I want to go to the next person.
Oh, God.
Okay. Okay.
I'm not continuing it. I'm just repeating.
Okay. What do you want? Say. Go ahead.
So as long as we're doing something that we like, even though it's just material.
It's not just material. It's not just material. But the material, that attraction may enhance your absorption, which gives you a spiritual taste. You may just like music. Some guy may walk off the street and love music.
Mm-hmm.
Like this guy who's playing the drums in Kailalipas. He had four or five drums, and somebody had to sit on the floor, and he had a little seat that he sat on the seat, and one was like a clay pot, and on the top was the, you know, and he could hit that clay pot, and like, you know, so you have someone that walks in there that was into drumming circles, the person's whole body would begin to move, but they'd experience something more because it was the rhythm. It's just to create the mood for the kirtan. So it's not just material. But I said that's one platform. And then there's a platform like Srila Bhakti Siddhanta says that you're so attached to the holy name that, you know, even the music doesn't, you know, if the person sings off key, you're still attracted because it's the holy name. So it's not just material, but things can be used in Krishna's service and transformed. That's called Tantra, I believe. It's a transformation. Okay, Gail, thank you again for your wonderful questions.
Maharaj?
Yes, Muni, Haribol.
Haribol, please accept my humble obeisance.
Haribol.
May I follow up Gail's question? Or
Please. Okay, Gail, star six.
Yeah, Gail, please mute your phone.
Okay.
All right, you have your say in court, okay?
Okay.
Okay, star six, quickly, Gail.
And Gail, okay. No calling my phone while I'm asking all these questions, which you've done before.
Okay, we have to do something, okay? Gail, I can still hear you.
I'm doing it.
Okay.
So, Maharaj, I have a question, but I want to put it forth as an
Yeah.
I want to take the position here, which I'm sympathetic to, but I'm going to try to present it as strong as I can, okay? Even stronger. Okay. That, you know, you've been discussing, you know, there's this issue, how much of something is our actual soul and how much of it is our material conditioning?
Right.
And I'm going to, and again, I don't totally endorse this, but I'm very sympathetic with this argument I want to try to get.
Yeah.
But,
by the way, Gail is in a state of ecstasy as you're ready to attack. I'm just joking.
Okay.
It's not like that. It's the way we do things here, but go ahead. Okay.
So, you know, in classical India, for whatever reason, the bhakti traditions were very deeply wedded to a kind of Sankhya notion that there's the soul and there's prakriti.
Right.
But I could imagine it being otherwise. I mean, it seems to me the notion of bhakti can be transplanted into other metaphysical systems.
Okay.
I mean, like, so for example, there's bhakti in Islam, and there's definitely bhakti in Christianity.
Right.
And I wonder that if a strong emphasis on this prakriti and purusha duality undermines bhakti, because there's this kind of sense that we feel like our soul is very far away somehow, right? We don't have any access to our soul. We just have access to our conditioning. And therefore, we don't trust ourselves. We don't trust our impulses in relation to even spiritual things.
Uh-huh.
And all we end up having these kind of stories like, well, you know, it's sure, encourage him to do this. Even though it's a mundane thing, it'll lead him towards bhakti or something, where maybe somebody likes to play drum, or maybe likes to study philosophy. So we say, well, study Bhagavad philosophy, where our idea is this is just this person's conditioning. And I wonder, I mean, to my mind, and again, I don't totally endorse this, but I'm
very sympathetic. I know your point. I appreciate your point.
Okay, let me just finish it then, if I may. So
yeah.
I always understood there's that story Prabhupada told that, you know, if you see a wallet in the street, the karmi wants to take the wallet for himself, the jnani wants to ignore the wallet, and the bhakti wants to take the wallet and use it and give it to its proper owner.
Yeah.
In my mind, if that story is really fleshed out, it means that the world is not a bad place anymore if we see it in relation to Krishna. The problem, I mean, not to say we can be karmis about it, but that maybe this kind of radical notion of duality, we should leave that behind, or at least we should not make it so prominent. That's more a symptom of jnana. Okay, that was the Purva Pakshan I wanted to put before you.
Okay. Well, first of all, I would say, you know, first of all, you know, every school of thought has a understanding of the relationship between spirit and matter, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all the Vaishnav schools. Now, you know, there's Vishishta Advait, Ashuddha Advait, right? Vallabhas?
Yeah.
What's that called? Ashuddha Advait.
Yeah, Ashuddha Advait.
You know, they see absolutely no difference between the world. You know, they don't make a distinction, right? Then there's Gaudiya Vedanta, right? Achintya Beda Beda Tattva, right? Simultaneously one and different, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, there's Madhva, Dvaita Advanta. Like it's different, right?
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, it's a very interesting thing. I once went to this scholar, and I asked him about this. You know, what's the difference between this and this? He said, really, if you want to understand, he said, because I said, you know, what's the difference between Ashuddha Advait and the Achintya Beda Beda Tattva? I mean, you know, what really is the difference? We also see it's God's energy, and are you saying it's non-different, you know, completely? And like, you know, and basically the point would be is that, you know, there's no real disagreement on the level of mature people. You know, there's ways to express different things in one sense. It's really not that different. It's really the emphasis. So when you talk about Prakriti and Purusha, everyone feels that way. You know, that's the understanding. There, you know, the soul is somehow encased in matter, in something. So I don't call it a narrative. That's the metaphysics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the metaphysics. Now, how it plays out, you know, depends on the circumstance. You know, if people are completely engrossed in matter, then you're going to express the difference, you know, because it's going to help them embrace the platform of the soul and see matter for what it actually is God's energy. What do we call matter? Maya. What is not? It's an illusion. What's the illusion? The illusion is that it's separate from God, but it's not separate from God. It's God's energy. So I really think, there's an understanding that everything is God's energy, and the transformation has to do in your approach to it. But different, you know, the different relationships with that energy of God and how to approach that it can be emphasized according to how it affects a person spiritually. So, you know, I can appreciate, you know, when you're speaking in one way, it may seem disadvantageous to another aspect of a person's life. You know, like, for example, renunciation is a truth, and it's definitely a truth. You're engaged in sex, you're dressed in drugs, you're, you know, you're sticking out money all day. Renunciation. You know, so, you know, separated. It's clearly distinct. You know, but then, you know, from so, but then that, you know, from another other platform, you know, things can be used in God's service. You know, and you can't live in the world in such a dichotomy, and that won't help you to see God either. So I think the real key to it is to understand that it's really an emphasis on your relationship with matter in different circumstances. And if you emphasize things in one way, then, you know, an application in another type of circumstance may look impractical. Mooney, you can go on.
Yeah. Okay. No. I'm sorry. I didn't know if you were stopping to think for a second.
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
So, my concern was that I felt like there might be an overemphasis on the duality between the distance between ourself and our current relationship. And your response was that it doesn't always have to be that way, but sometimes to help people who are deeply engrossed, that's focused upon. Although it's also totally reasonable and true to focus on how our relationship with God is present right now. We don't have to be worried about it if we have the right kind of attitude. Did that kind of summarize what you said?
I think the thread of what I was discussing is that our relationship with matter has to do with how we approach it. And how we approach it, then it has to be... I think you expressed it well. I don't have to say more. I think that's the real point. Yeah.
All right. Because what you reminded me, like in our little Gita study group, we're studying the fourth chapter now,
yes.
and Prabhupada has that unbelievable, that really deep purport on verse 424, where he basically says, matter is almost like a subjective perspective, and that if you approach the energy of God properly, there's no more matter. There's just Krishna's energy. The 424.
It's Krishna's energy, but it's an energy. It's an energy. Yeah, it's Krishna's energy, but it's still an energy that serves a particular function, and therefore you have to deal with it accordingly. You know,
uh-huh.
But if you deal with it properly, then its connection with God is revealed. Maya means illusion. So the illusion is that something is separate from God. But that energy itself does have the potency to put you in that illusion.
Mm.
So in that sense, okay, stay aloof from it. But in the same sense, you can be free from the illusion and see it for what it is, which is in connection with God. And that's the whole purpose of karma yoga. The purpose of karma yoga is by taking matter and using it in God's service, you begin to see it as God. So it doesn't affect you in that way. It doesn't have that, but we shouldn't underestimate that it's the illusory potency. It can make you see something that's not there, that's not healthy for you. So I think that's also a very clear thing. Even though there's no duality, it's God's energy, but there's a duality, not a duality, it's not a duality in the sense that it's separate from God, but there's some dharma or function to that energy, which you have to deal with carefully. Now, let's say in the Vallabha Sampradaya, by seeing everything as God's energy, that's one way of dealing with it carefully. By not making any distinction, they're hoping that you'll deal with things very, very reverently and spiritually,
yeah.
And therefore the illusion won't affect you.
Mm-hmm.
And in Gaudiya Vedanta, Achintya Veda Tattva, it's saying, stay aloof a little bit, because it's dangerous. But in one sense, there's no difference, too. It's just how you deal with it, your approach to it. In other words, how you can approach it to see the energy as part of God. So one way you can see it as part of God by being in this spiritual narrative that there's no spiritual world, distinct from the material world, it's all the spiritual world, because it's all God's energy. That's okay, but what's the danger of that? The danger of that is you'll be a little careless and you'll get caught by the illusory energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen that. I'm not criticizing, but I've seen that in certain volumes. That, okay, for your spiritual life, you can take a little bong, hashish, because it's all shooted weight. You know what I'm saying? And then you have that kind of thing. And then you have the thing maybe with Gaudians, right, where you become a little hateful of matter, you know? And therefore you become absorbed in it more.
So, well, and
I think the real point is the approach. They're both the appropriate strategies for dealing with the material world, but they each can have their, weakness or something. I can't say weakness in the philosophy, but your approach. Anyway, what were you going to say?
Yeah. Oh, that's I know. I really appreciate it how you just framed it. I was thinking, you were saying how you could be a Valabha and you could fall into kind of this self-indulgence because you might think the whole world is yours to enjoy, on a, like if you're immature. And I was thinking you could be a Gaudiya, and our whole sampradaya is love of God, but we might have this idea, I'm not allowed to try to love God until I'm basically liberated, which I think is an idea that I had for a long time, right? That, you know, how can you even talk about loving God? You know, do you have any sex desire? Do you have any attachment to the world? This is all just sahajya, you know, this kind of story, which, my God, we're followers of Lord Chaitanya, for God's sake, you know, so anyway, so. Sorry, that was, whatever. Thank you. You really helped, Marge.
It's such an interesting discussion. But, Mooney, let's write these ideas, because I think this is kind of a unique way of presenting it.
Okay.
Just write something up to me afterwards on an email. You know, maybe I'll write a little journal entry or something, because this is an interesting philosophical point.
Okay.
You know, I think the concept, which is inherent in there, is the key is to be free from illusion and see everything as God's energy. And what's the best way to do it? And in what circumstance? Okay, thanks, Marie.
Great.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much, Marsh.
Okay. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna? Who's that?
Brother Charlie, welcome back.
Mother Indrani, I'm going to contact you soon so that when I go down to Florida, we could get together, okay?
Yes, and I'm waiting for that autograph.
My book is coming down, autograph. I'm signing it today. Dear Indrani, may this help. We had this book signing yesterday, too, which is really great.
Right, I'm so happy for you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Always good to get blessings from Mother Indrani. Just by her,
thank you, Mara.
By her sweet voice. You have to respect those who have worshipped God for many, many years. Okay. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna, go
ahead. Who's that?
It's Eka Chakra.
Oh, Eka Chakra. Maybe I'll call you in about a half hour now because she wrote me a letter.
Yes, that'd be great.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd like to speak to you. And I am going to Boston and doing a program too, so maybe I'll stay over there. Okay,
great.
Thank you. Anybody else? Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Please accept my humble obeisances.
Amiya, Hare Krishna. Thank you for your letter yesterday and your help. Thank you. Okay. I'll use it well. Thank you. Okay. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna? Okay. Thank you all. Vanchakalpa Kurugya Shakabasindu Vaimachapati Kinam Bhavani Vyuk.